be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or are developing to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. On this episode, we'll hear from Pastor Dwight Miniweather and his partner Latoya Miniweather with Straightway Services about the work they've been doing in the community for the past 20 years and what they have planned for the new village shelter that will be opening in December in Montevilla. The Joint Office of Homeless Services is funding and supporting the new village shelter, which is in the process of being constructed on 82nd Avenue in Southeast Portland.
Well, I think it's like early 2000. I was working with the Black Parent Initiative, BPI, and we went to New Orleans and we were studying charter schools at the time of Katrina. And as I was doing the work there, I came up with a concept of traumatic reentry. Trauma reentry, not from like a storm or, but traumatic reentry coming from a house where your mom been beat up and you got to go to school, coming from a house where there's loud music until 6 a.m, but you got to be at school. The trauma that takes place daily versus a astronomical trauma of a flood or something that happens maybe every 10 years, but every day some kid is walking from a traumatized home and trying to go and figure out a suffice. So after that, I came back and said I would start a wraparound service. So I started my nonprofit from that experience. That's how we formulated the Straightway, and Straightway means immediately. And that's what we try to program here, is immediate effects, not something that takes you a long, long time. So
I came involved a couple of years later, but the activities that Straightway Service do, the basketball camps, I helped out. My son was part of it as well. So,
you know, I started off with the ninth grade count doing some work where I really started moving around with the ninth grade count with Sam Adams when he was taking 30 kids by bus to a corporation or to a college experience. And I did that for like 5 years with the youth at the same time, working with the Water Bureau, with a workforce program with the Water Bureau for 10 African-American kids to be introduced to the careers of what the Water Bureau has to offer a community. And
this is a true blessing. Just to be able to have our own place where we can also now provide temporary alternative shelter for them. So instead of open our doors for just a little bit of hours or 24 hours, you know, they can possibly stay there for a year or up to two, but also get their resources in home. So what we're providing out there, they'll get it inside the shelter. So I think that's amazing. I'm super excited, and I can't wait till the shelter or the safe park is up and running. Yeah.
And for me, it was the vision of this. People that are around me will tell you that over 15 years ago, I said I'd be where I am today. And I told them 15 years ago, we'd be in a position where I'd be able to feed folks, house folks, and bring things to their lives that they wouldn't be able to do. And it would be called the Light Community. That is the name of the new shelter.
And that's going to open in about January 2025?
We'll be open, taking applications in November, but people will actually be doing move-ins in December.
Yeah.
But we'll be opening up and starting to do intakes and everything about the November 1st around there is when we'll start actually intaking people, getting them prepared for their unit, getting them to understand the policies and procedures of the program and what we're doing. And so, yeah.
And how many, their tiny homes or sleeping pods, how many are there going to be?
Well, there's 39. Yeah, it's 39 pods. That are
39.
Be,
33 pods
and 40.
And up to 40,
up to 40 participants. Yeah, 33 with 40. Okay. Yeah, 40 participants can be.
And it's good because it's like right before usually our winter gets really bad. So I'm definitely excited about that, you know. Mm-hmm. So they don't have another rough winter because a lot of people passed away last year.
And all of the units have heat and cooling.
Yes.
So the units have, so they'll be nice and warm through
nice
winter. Won't be anybody having to light propane or they got a full unit with electrical outlets and, mm-hmm. you know, they have a front stoop where they could come out and sit in front of their unit. It's going to be like a little tiny community of houses. All that's connected from there, as well as if they really take advantage of the rent wheel services that would be provided there, will clear up any past misunderstandings with landlords and it'll bring them up to landlord tenant understanding right now, so they'll be able to function and understand how important a relationship with your landlord really is versus just paying your rent. You want to kind of know them.
Or just a basic understanding of reliving again in a unit, because they have been outside surviving for so long, people forget to think that they have to redo their mind again just for basic things. You know, I met one person visiting the shelters that we help and support, like the one on 33rd. We go and give them food,
Dignity Village,
clothing. But it took, just talking to them, it took them a while for them to even take off their shoes and feel comfortable, even though they knew they were in their own little tiny houses. Still a mind frame of survival is embedded in their brain because they had to do it for so long. So
it's probably also fear. People have fear living on the street. And I wonder if you could talk about that and how just having to deal with that and calming down the nervous system from that state of constant fear.
And, you know, it is a term that I when I'm out there, I speak with them and I say, listen, it's called position. And once you're in certain positions, there are things that go with position. So once you're in a position, how can you not have fear when you are in a position where fear is the number one thing? And so when we go out, we don't say, well, hey, man, how you living? We like, man, it's just a position. And with the position comes the conditions of what you go through because of the position you are in. And then those things you can change. So those are things we talk about. Like, you could change your position. You could be broke today and change that position tomorrow and be rich. But if you look at it as a problem more than you look at it as a position, you probably give more credence to a problem. Like, oh, it's harder to get rid of a problem, but it's easy to change your position. Like, stop going over there and just come over here. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see, oh, well, when I come over here, someone gives me food. Someone gives me clothing. Someone gives me love. Someone speaks with me. When I'm in that position, I'm afraid and I'm scared because someone's stealing from me. Someone's attacking me. Someone's going to do something to me. And it's just because of where I'm at. This doesn't just come over here all the time. I have to be pretty much in the position. So that's what we wind them down with the fact of the matter that that's the reason why they're able to send the narrative that's being sent. Fear brings a narrative. And, yeah, I imagine if I stayed out there, I would sleep in my clothes. Because if I got to jump up and run out, I don't want to have to put clothes on. And if somebody comes in to rob me, I don't want to have to get dressed, you know, to stop them from robbing me clothes. I'm going to be there with my little stick or whatever I sharpened up, and I'm going to be laying on there waiting. And hopefully I can go to sleep without nobody bothering me. But if I do, I know I'm afraid and I have this. And so when we start to tell them how important it is to bring that fear factor down by changing position, I think we've been very successful with that because we've changed positions of a lot of people. Some of the people you've seen running around, the young lady you've seen with the blonde hair, she was just out there on the streets not even 3 weeks ago. And if you see her now, you would never know she was even out there.
Yeah, she's...
You walk by her right now. You guys just walked by her. That was one of the houses from right out of the Tin City. Now, you can go back and tell your friends who saw you in that position, look at me now. I changed my position, not my personality. I'm still me. I'm still a little quirky. I'm still a little funny. Still a little weird. All I am is just over here now where things good happen, and I'm not over there where I got to fight for my life. So basically, I think once you explain that to someone, like, do you understand the difference in being able to sleep and then having to fear for your life through a whole night? And it's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, the position you in, no locks, no doors. You're vulnerable. And if you're out here with a Walkman, a radio, and all the other people don't have one, yours is the one they're going to want to have. And they're going to break in your stuff. They're going to rob you. They're going to jump you. They're going to attack you because you're not like them. You have some things. You're trying to accumulate some things, and they're just taking things. They're just stealing things. They don't even really care about. And you didn't put yourself in a position to be with those people. And believe me, I don't think you can stop anything. I think we can probably prevent a lot of different things. But stopping people from making those choices and stopping people from being in those positions, I don't think we can stop that. But I do believe that we can bring some humanity back to that position if you find yourself to happen to lose your job. I met so many people living, they used to have a boat, a house, a fence. Now they live in the RV that used to be in the driveway.
Yeah.
Because the house is gone, the boat is gone, the cars are gone, the job is gone. And the only thing they have was that beautiful RV that they used to have in the driveway of that beautiful house. Now they're living
in the RV.
In the RV. At some point, I don't think if you really constantly think that if I have nothing and I have me to feed, I'm going to do something. And at that point, I don't know if it would be integral or if it would have morals, but I know I need to eat. And that's where we have a lot of people in a position where they're not thieves, but an opportunity came to eat, and they took the opportunity. And you say, oh, they stole. No, that was an opportunist. That was a person who's starving to death, saw a sandwich, nobody was by it. I'm hungry. Picked it up. Ate it. Yo, you thief. No, I'm not a thief. I'm not a thief. I'm not a thief. But we have studies that were done in the early 1800s with lab rats that kind of showed them how to put poverty in a place to restrict movement and how to put success in a place to make sure things flow. So with the rats, they made sure that they did a nice little survey back then where they took 100 rats and they put them in a clean space, and they took another 100 rats and put them in a cage that didn't have amenities, didn't have food, didn't have water. And they watched those rats for 4 months, and they took them to the maze. And when they took them to the maze, the ones in the clean could go through, the ones in the dirty were stuck. They were just sitting in the maze, weren't even moving. They swapped them. Then in the swap, they found out that the hunters that didn't move, now that they were in the clean environment, they put them back in. They went straight on through. The ones that were in the clean environment, they put them in the dirty one, they got stuck. Then they said, well, let's go a little further. Let's leave them another 4 months and see what happened. And 4 months later, they came back and the rats were eating each other. So they knew if they kept us hungry enough, keep us poppy enough, we'd eat each other. And that's what we're doing. If you're not paying attention, every ghetto, every poverty-stricken project, they're eating each other. You can barely come out your door. Someone's shot every day. Someone's dying every day. They're eating each other because that study showed them that if you keep education, keep food away, you keep things away that people need, the instinct is just going to come. So it's not new what they're doing. They know exactly what that does.
When they come here, we do a food pantry every Wednesday. They come in here and get some food. They come and get clothing. I mean, if we had a shower here, we'll let them shower if they could, you know, but they're able to get clean clothing, lady utensils, which is tampons and pads, just basic things that people need to survive. You know, us as women, we go through things monthly, and if it's hard to get those things, you know, you might have an accident and there's more issues you have to deal with, you know, but just coming here, opening our doors, give them back just a little bit of dignity, and that just, it just feels good, you know.
Yeah, our Thursday family dinners do the same thing. Thursday night we do a dinner at 6 o'clock. And they just come, we set up like 5 or 6 tables, and we cook dinner. We put real food that we know that they have not been interfacing.
Yeah.
And it just makes me, you know, one guy came and he ate some of my dressing and he started crying. Me and my mom used to make dressing like this. And, you know, and it just means something to me to bring back that level of humanity, because at some point you're eating out of garbage cans, you're eating from wherever you're eating from, and to be able to sit at a table, have people serve you.
Yeah, like you're at a restaurant.
And not serve you like you're, but serve you with love. Hey, man, you want another? You know, it's just a whole different thing. So, you know, we're here, like I said, 7 days a week we're in this facility. I'm not at this building. Mm-hmm. 7 days a week from 2020 when I came in this door. Mm-hmm. 7 days a week I've been here every day. Mm-hmm. I come here Monday through Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here in a capacity of like in my office hidden. I'm like here. Like you could come to me. My propane tank needs $25 pastor to get some propane. I give them the $25 so they can go get their propane and make sure their camper's warm. I'm here doing this 7 days a week. Then I have clients that are appointment, but these are just walk-ups. These are people who just walk up and say, hey, is there any way you could? And we're here 7 days a week like that. And we're normally here by 9:30. We're a little late today, but we're normally in this building before 10, and we don't leave until about 7.
Yeah.
Every day. Mm-hmm. So.
On holidays,
we're here.
We spend time with our family. We make sure that we have gifts. We make
Christmas morning
gifts for
women and
the
50
men and women, and we go out and give them presents. It's wrapped up.
Christmas
nice
morning,
dinner.
Every year for 20
every
years this has happened.
Christmas. And it just feels good to just see the smiles on their face. You know, Christmas morning, like somebody is thinking about me. You know, somebody has some gifts for me to open. And then they have a nice breakfast with us. And on Thanksgiving, we give out nice Thanksgiving dinners and we take them out there. We should take clothes with us. So if they can't make it to us, we're going to make it to them. We're going to meet them where they are if they can't make it to us.
We have several living testimonies right now. People like the young lady, she's not in the streets anymore. She's obviously indoors. Look how clean her body. If you could have seen her, the dirt on the feet, the hands that couldn't get clean because no matter how much she washed them,
it's dangerous.
In the beginning, they were just still dirty. Now she come and put her hand out. It's like my hand. And I like, look at your hands. And she looks at her hands. I said, they're new, huh? And she's like, wow. Wow. You know, and those kind of things are life-changing. People don't understand.
Yeah,
those are life-changing things to be able to know where you were and see where you are right now. And her consistent behavior now that she's got the rhythm of understanding, oh, the only problem I had is I was going over there.
Yeah.
All I had to do is stop positioning myself over there and position myself right here, and everything has totally changed in my life. Like, I'm not hungry anymore. I don't look for where my food's coming from. I don't have to worry about clothes. I'm in my best clothes. I'm dressed up. I'm shining. I can change clothes every day. I go home. I can shower now. I got a kitchen. I got places. And she's now comfortable with what she was uncomfortable with. Natural, normal, everyday living. Yeah. She had became uncomfortable with that because she hasn't lived that way. So now you see her and she's still has some of the concepts like, yeah. Girl, why are you eating so many sandwiches? Why are you eating so... you get to go home later and eat again. It's not like...
Somebody's going
to... Yeah, but you can still see that part of her from being hungry and being out there. And every chance of food came, she just ate, obviously. Because right now you're not hungry, and anytime food comes out, you just grab food. And I'm like, girl, you just had some food like 10 minutes ago. Are you hungry again, or is this just still the mentality? And then she thought about it. She said, I'm not hungry. You're right. This is just a familiar mentality. And now she doesn't do it. It's like, she's like, I was like, yeah, sometimes it's just, man. We have five that was homeless that are now not homeless because they work with Easter Seal through the Easter Seal program, 55 and older.
Yeah.
And they're paying their own rent today. They're living in their own apartment. They work for us. Volunteer. Actually, three of them are in there. They'll be coming back from Birch's. Birch's is where we go and we get our donations for the food that we give out biweekly. They allow us like 3,000 pounds of food.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about Nature's and New Season type food. I mean, very healthy, expensive, beautiful stuff sits on that table. By the time you get ready to leave, you'll see them loading in the creamers and the soy milk and the plant-based products. And we just we've been doing our work with that for a while. But what we love is the success of everybody that you're going to see, that you walk through the store and see. They were houseless.
Yeah.
And they're not now.
Yeah.
So we have proven track record of evidence where we can actually take you to every place that we're talking about, and you can walk in and see the people and go, wait a minute, how did this happen? And we tell them it's simple. There are just some people that are not looking for handouts. They're looking for a hand up, and if you put it out there, they'll grab it. But if you seem like you're talking down to them, if it seems like you're not even meeting me where I'm at, then I don't want nothing from you. I don't desire for your help. But when you make me feel human and make me feel understood, then I'm like, okay, I'll come and check you out and see what happens.
Yep. We want them to be successful. We just don't want to put them out there and then they fail because they don't have the resources or just the mind frame and not the appropriate amount of time to even get out of the mind frame of survival. And then they're back on the street. You know, then by the time something else comes around, they're like, what's the point? I'm not going to get the resources. I'm not going to get the support that I need until I'm better mentally. I'm just going to be out here. So why do that? Why do that to myself? Well, just stay out here because that's where I'm going to end up. But just giving them the time that they need for fixing their mentality to be successful is what we provide.
So we fought hard for that space. It was just like, that's the reason why that space meant so much to me. It was like,
2 years.
They need a place where they could come through, and then maybe the prototype of this project, after they see it perform, because I guarantee you, after a year, you're going to be back here talking to me saying,
at the shelter though,
how did you guys move 50 to 60 people to a living in a year? How did 60 people become successful? We would have been thinking maybe 10, 12. How did you get 60 people to turn back in 1 year to normal living? And they're going to want to know that. And then they're going to want me to reproduce this. And they're going to want to reproduce it because this is what the safety and you guys use words, low barrier, and I'm like, well, really, for that to really happen, you have to provide a space where the people can really receive harm reduction services. And that's what we use. Harm reduction. Well, to reduce the harm, okay, I get it. We don't want them in front of the grocery stores downtown. We don't want... But a harm reduction isn't me really giving you a motel to do drugs in. That's not really harm reduction. That's kind of like moving you out the way. But I knew that we did need them out out the way, but not in a way that it was being framed by the business sector, you know. But they do need a place. And it's not because, they just need a place. And it's a place that understands, a place that they can work through, that they could come out of and get back to natural living. But if that place doesn't exist and everything is like, you do this or you do that or you don't do this, and if you don't do that, you don't want nothing, you don't care about nothing, and that kind of approach just shuts people down. No one can tell me what I want. And you can't tell me I'm out here wanting to be houseless. Yeah. You can't tell me I want to be drugs.
That's right.
You could tell me I am. I get it. I am houseless and I am out here. But how are you going to tell the world and everybody else, I love this?
Yeah.
We just keep winning from the love and the passion that we put out there.
I think that's what gets them right there, the love.
We have no drama out there. No one's been attacked. We've been doing this for 20 years. I've never had no one attacked in the field of the houses. So if they're so vicious, why don't we have stories of people being...
Yeah, being mean and rude. And
so if they're like people say they are, why are they looking out for each other with love and compassion and taking care of each other if they're all animals? And so I really appreciate the opportunity to get a voice on the table that kind of shares a little more in-depth understanding of what's really out there, because if you're not really out there like I am, like I really am, you're faking, and you don't really know. You don't really know. You're just talking from a seat of surveys, data, information you got from another state about what this is. But if you come and walk our streets like we do, and get out in our streets like we do, you will find out the main thing we have going on here is the allowance of public use of drugs. Because, I mean, when I rode up on the guy, he was pulling his pipe. Boom, boom, boom. I pull up. He looks at me. He sees me. He's wondering, well, is this like the police or what is this? You guys are pulling up with 6 cars. What's going on? He's getting high. And he looks over and I say, hey, man, we just here to get you water. We here to give you some food. Boom, 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 boom. And he looked at me again and he kind of just put his pipe in his pocket. Then he came on over and got him a lunch, got him some water,
and
boom, 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 got his mister. And he realized no one said anything about his pipe. Because that's something you got to figure out, brother. I'm just here to love you. I'm just here to tell you there's another opportunity, it's another position, but I'm not here to take nobody and kidnap nobody from your environment. But if you want to, we will take you right now. We can put you in a bed. We have some people to say, yeah, right now. And then we have some people, next week, man, next week.
Come see me
next week, man. I promise I'm going next week. And some of them have. Some of them have most definitely kept their promise and went in and detoxed and did what they needed to do. But that's our whole reasoning is once upon a time I was an addict.
Yeah.
And that's my reasoning. And everybody said I wanted what, and they put me down real good. But look at me now. Yeah, I wasn't the trash that people were talking about, but they were talking about me like I was like. So today, I look back and say to myself, imagine if I would have just believed what they said.
Yeah.
And never believed in myself and picked myself back up and put myself in. So right now, I'm just that guy that's going around saying, hey, man, I want to be the one to believe in you. I want to be the one to say, I know you can do it. I know you can do it. I'm sure you can. I got you. I'm going to help you. Versus when I was going around, nobody really wanted to help. They just criticized you, locked doors, and talk about you. It was a spiritual epiphany that I had that came in my life at a time of wanting to commit suicide. And being so tired of being a dope fiend son, being a dope fiend father. Dope fiend community member, dope fiend friend, boyfriend, whatever I was at that moment. If you were around me, I was a dope fiend. And something just came over me and just was like, you're better than that. Even what you're hearing, you hear it, you believe it, you say it about yourself. But something my spirit can say, you're better than that. So one day I just looked and said, hey, if you're real, give me something I never had before. And I said, I need peace. Because I had a lot of money, I had a lot of drugs and stuff, but I never had peace, never been just sweet and calm. I was like, I want that. He gave it to me. That's me today. And I've been that for 25 years. It's not hard to be because I just don't judge anyone. I have no grudges with anyone. They'll tell you, people come here and they take advantage of me in such a very malicious way, but they always get to come back. There's nobody that's ever stole from me, took money from me, that has not came back and got more money and more food, because I don't shut down. I do not shut down. I will not shut down because you're hurting.
That was Pastor Dwight Miniweather and his partner Latoya Miniweather from Straightway Services, the organization selected to run the new village-style shelter in Montevilla starting in December 2024. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
Are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.